You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Hiya, it's Steve here. How are you doing? I hope you're keeping very healthy. Welcome to another edition of the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast. And today, we've got a winner's special for you because dozens of Eurovision stars all gathered at the Ziggo Dome in Amsterdam for Het Grote Songfestival Feest, which is one of the largest Eurovision events outside of the contest itself. So in English, that title is translated as the Big Song Festival Party, and that is exactly what it was. I was backstage and it was a who's who of Eurovision. 15 winners in total from the likes of Loreen, Conchita, Carola, Johnny Logan and Kalush Orchestra, all sharing this same long corridor, mingling with each other, hanging out and having fun. Now, one of the hosts was two-time Eurovision participant herself and also one of the presenters of the 2021 contest in Rotterdam, Edzilia Romblay, who told me the vibe there was just amazing.
It's very cool to be around these people and you see that they so want to do a great job and they want to perform and they want to, you know, and you can see all the love that they're getting from the audience and you can see that they're giving it back. And I just heard even Loreen said, I love the energy, I love to perform here. And so that's such a great compliment, you know, that they all came here and wanted to do their song.
I've got so much for you, so we're going to get straight to it. Here is what's coming up. Duncan Lawrence tells us about his star-studded flight.
This sounds like the start of a joke. Three winners of Eurovision were sitting in a plane, and I was like, okay, this is what is going to happen tonight.
Mr. Lordy discusses his ideal perfume.
Rubber and sweat and dirt.
Netta channels her inner cheerleader.
I look like a giant pompon. You can look it up on my IG.
Katrina from Katrina and the Waves reflects on 25 years of Love Shine a Light.
It was the perfect opportunity for the song to really shine, no pun, in a completely beautiful way.
And I got one winner to take part in our new feature, Eurovision on the Spot.
Hi, guys. This is Loreen, and you're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast. It's the best. Yeah, it is.
Let's get cracking, and we're going to start with the man who has one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Eurovision song on streaming platforms. Duncan Lawrence won for the Netherlands in 2019. He won with Arcade, and that song has been streamed and viewed billions of times. After Eurovision, his song blew up on TikTok. He went into the American charts. He moved to Sweden. He's just done a song with Armenia's Rosalyn. And he's involved with next year's Dutch Eurovision act. Always a pleasure to catch up with him. Here he is. It's Duncan Lawrence. So we're backstage with Duncan Lawrence. Hello, Duncan.
Hi.
There are so many winners here. It's crazy.
I know. It's almost an all-star season of like Eurovision.
Yeah, it is. Honestly, it's like its own year. It's like Eurovision, best of the best. There's just no point.
Just dropping that there, Eurovision. Just think about it.
It's so funny walking down that corridor, though, seeing all their names. Yeah. I mean, it must be so nice as a winner yourself, being amongst them all.
This morning, we flew from Stockholm to here because I live in Stockholm now. I don't live in Amsterdam anymore. And I was in the plane, I was like, is that Loreen? I think so. And I was like, I'm not going to bother her. And then the next person that walked in, I was like, is that Mons? And I was like, this sounds like the start of a joke. Three winners of Eurovision were sitting in a plane. And I was like, okay, this is what is going to happen tonight. This is what it's going to be like. But the one winner I really, really, really don't want to miss is Lordy. Because I was 10 when I saw Lordy win. And I am obsessed with them.
I haven't seen them yet. Have you? Have you seen any hint or glimpse of them?
No, but that's the magic around Lordy.
I know, because we wouldn't know them if they walked past us just as a normal, without everything on.
I think they wear crew sweaters. And then they go into their backstage and change into their magical outfits.
They're probably the most normal looking people in the world. You just wouldn't even notice them.
I know. But it would be a childhood dream to take a picture with.
Make it happen, Duncan.
I know. I was going to knock on their door, but I was like, yeah, I can't really do that with Lordy.
Did you say hello, by the way, to Loreen and Mons in the end on the plane?
I did, yeah. After a while, we were like, after the plane ride, actually, we were at the where you get the baggage belt.
Yeah, baggage claim.
Claim, yeah. So that's where we met up, and then we had the same taxi ride here.
Did you?
Yes. Oh my God.
Literally, yeah. Once you're in the Eurovision bubble, you yeah. can't get out
share
of it.
Share Ubers.
Forever and ever.
Yeah.
Till the end of time.
Yes.
What does it mean, though? Because it's been, what is it, 3 years, 3.5 years?
Yeah, 3.5 years, yeah.
Does it feel like this tiny amount of time's passed or like
no,
years?
It feels like years, actually, but that's mainly because of lockdown in between it. I have to admit that was a huge part of like the time frame being like very weird now for me, because I honestly, when I look back on Eurovision, of course it feels like yesterday. Sometimes when I see it and I'm like, oh my God, that feeling, I know it so well of being there and, you know, having to rehearse and going every single day nonstop, doing interviews like with you, for example, and just, but then at the same time, it feels so far away and I kind of miss it sometimes a little bit. So I'm really happy. That's why I said yes to this, actually, because I wasn't busy this year. So I was like, if I'm free, I am going to this and I'm going to kind of relive that moment a little bit for myself. Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's so nice to have so many people here. Now, you've just done a song with Rosalind.
Yeah.
And what's amazing about you two is you both had your songs from Eurovision blow up on TikTok. She's hunting you down in the terms of streams on yeah. streaming platforms, you know.
Yeah.
What was it like to work with her?
Well, first of all, I hope that she hunts me down because she deserves it. I mean, it's been incredible to work with someone so creative, someone so down to earth. And we became very good friends also. And she spent a couple of days in Stockholm and we just walked through the city and just talked about her experiences. And I think we both kind of felt things landing for the first time as we talked about it, because before we didn't really have anyone to talk to about those heavy things that you go through when you do Eurovision, because it's not all glitter and sunshine.
There's a lot to do.
There's so much to do and there's so many things you have to think about and be, you know, smart about, because in the end it's still a competition and you don't want to, you know, fail anyone or fail yourself or whatever. So that part we could really discuss with each other, and for me it was more of a also like the whole thing that happened after Eurovision, which was like all of a sudden my dreams came true, and for her it was the same. All of a sudden all of her dreams started to come true, and it was like at the same time it could be so overwhelming, you know, but you're thinking like, this is something super nice and super good. Why am I feeling like it's too much mm-hmm. sometimes? And we could really just like talk about that and chill down and just reflect on it and just be humans with each other, you know? And that was so nice. Not that it was too much to handle, but just in general, like, oof, wow, that was a busy day. How was your day? What was your interview like? Oh, tell me. Oh, really? Like that. That was so nice to have. It's so nice to finally have a friend like that.
I was going to say, what's so nice about what you've just said is in this age of music where so many collaborations take place either virtually or it's just recording something into your phone and sending it to a yeah. producer and you don't even meet the other person
That's right.
that you're recording with, to actually have a day where you walked around
yeah.
and hung out must have been so nice.
I know. She was there for a couple of days. We just walked around Stockholm. We went to like get her a nice little like shirt at like this amazing shop. It was just so nice to share that too. She is just like, I don't know, it just felt like we were just like meant to be friends. Yeah.
And honestly, seeing Snap do the numbers is right. is crazy, because it happened with Arcade as
I
well.
Know, yeah. I mean, like, still, every time I look into my Spotify things, I'm just like, it's still streaming 1 million a day? Like, it's like a day, like we're talking. I'm just like, how is that possible? And then they're like, wait till Eurovision comes around the corner of May. And I'm like, all right, we'll see. But I am happy, because that is such a nice confidence that you get as an artist. It's such a nice thing to feel that something that you did at a certain moment in time was appreciated and was like shared by so many people later also. With me, it was like a span of like a couple of years, but
yeah.
that song resonating with so many people. And, you know, as an artist, you get a lot of questions like, am I doing the right thing? Am I following the right path? Am I doing it? Am I too commercial? Am I too this? Am I too that? And then I'm like, every time I have those questions in mind, I just go back to the moment of writing that song. And I think to myself, I felt so good and so nice in that moment. That's what I just have to apply to every single step I take in my career, every single song I write, every single outfit I wear, every single thing I do, basically, so that I always have that confidence that I'm gaining every single time from Arcade, from the support that it got.
I love that philosophy. I think it's a good philosophy to have. It almost in a way keeps you grounded as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We need to ask you, you love Eurovision so much that you are involved in a way with the 2023 Dutch Act. Yeah. And this is the first time we're going to ask you about this. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the singers.
So I can't tell you too much because it's up to them to tell their stories. But me and Dion are two amazing, incredible artists that Jordan, my partner, and I, we do everything together. We write everything together. So just a little side note. We met them and we were just blown away by their talent. And then this song was written and we were like, oh my God, what if this and this happens and we combine this and this and that producer and this and that, and then we'll send it to Eurovision, like the Dutch delegation, and we'll see if they like it. And I was like pushing it so hard, and I was like, here's a staging idea, here's this, here's that, I know what I'm doing, please pick us.
You had it all in your head.
I know, I'm crazy sometimes, but I think that it's going to be beautiful. I hope that it's going to be the start of their careers. And I hope that it's even more the start of their careers than it was for me for Eurovision. That's how much I love them. That's how much I think they deserve to be there, to stand in front of those 118 million people. I remind them every day so they can get used to that number. But I think they'll blow Europe away. I can't say too much, but I think that something really magical is going to happen.
So it was like every single jigsaw puzzle piece in your mind fit together with this act next year.
Well, it's our collective of minds, of course, but I'm a big part of the creative process together with my partner, with my fiance. We're the creative team behind the act. So
you're the glue.
The visuals, and making sure that everything they want is there in a way where everyone understands it, where it's approachable but artsy and this and that. I'm like we're the ones who try to tie the story together for sure. Yeah, with them in the main picture, of course.
Well, look, you had your mentor in Ilse, you know, and now you're their mentor, essentially.
Yes. I've learned from the best, so Eurovision, you better watch out.
Are you excited, though, about them, Liverpool 2023? Yes. You're going to be there, I assume?
I am super, super excited. I'm going to be there for the whole 2 weeks with them. All the rehearsals, I'll be there. I'll be backstage. I'll be there to help them, to be their mental support, to be everything that they need me to be. Like I said, I learned from the best. Ilse did that with me in my year, and I know how much it meant to me. So I hope that I can be just even a little bit of what she was to me back then in 2019.
It's great to have you involved. Go and enjoy the show tonight. See how many winners you can collect tonight.
It's like Pokemon. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But thank you so much. I will. And I hope that I relive a little bit of Tel Aviv tonight, because that would be the biggest gift I could get out tonight. But I think, Matt, judging from the room, that's going to happen.
Duncan Lawrence, thank you.
Thank you.
Duncan mentioned that flight from Stockholm. If anybody was travelling to the gig that day, they would have seen Carola 2, literally a Eurovision dream. 4 winners on the same flight. Proper Eurovision royalty. Now, next up is the singer who won exactly a year before Duncan did. And going into the 2018 contest in Lisbon, there was loads of hype around Netta. She was one of the acts everyone wanted to talk to, and she was probably the favourite to win. Toy, her winning song, still remains catchy as anything. And in winning for Israel, she then took the contest to Tel Aviv. I popped into her dressing room backstage in Amsterdam to have a little catch up.
You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Hello to Netta.
Hello.
There are so many winners here.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm just overwhelmed by the amount of Eurovision winners in one small space.
Why I asked.
Honestly, what is it like being amongst so many other people who've done the same thing as you?
It's like, have you ever been to like a reunion?
Like a high school reunion?
Have you ever like met somebody from high school on the street? So it's exactly, it's similar, but with Eurovision stars.
Yeah, it's like the best of the best.
Yeah, it's like eating breakfast with Conchita and you know, getting in the elevator and popping pimples with Lorraine. It's like it's exactly this. It's nice because they are amazing people and they are amazing artists and they're very talented. And it's always amazing to be around incredible people, to be inspired by incredible people. And it's sometimes it's overwhelming and you're starstruck and sometimes it's, you know, it's fun or it's like it's making you face your insecurities or it's new people.
I know it's new people, but it's everybody who's done that's been in the same position at some point in their life. And that's what, you know, not many people in this world have done that.
You're saying it creates kind of the support group.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like group therapy, isn't it? It's like,
you know, kinda is. But it's mostly like, you know, good people getting together and getting other people happy. It's a cool event. This is why I came back.
I just said to Lordy, the problem with the podcast is we can't see you, and I'm currently sat with you, and literally your skirt is around you like a massive flower, black and pink. This
is a skirt. It's a dress.
Dress. I apologize.
That looks like a gigantic skirt.
Yes, and I apologize. That's a better description.
Thank you.
Do you accept my apology?
I will think about it. I look like a giant pompon. You can look it up on my IG.
I think we're like 4 years now after you've won. It's like crazy times passed. Like
COVID took 2 years of that, and time kind of stopped. But you know, it flew away. It doesn't feel like for 4 years. I am happy to tell you that I'm currently creating my new era. And
the new era of Netta.
Yes, and I'm very, very excited about it, about everything that is going to happen, and it's everything is coming out. I have I have a lot of important stuff to say, and to create and to color. I released two amazing songs this year, in my opinion. Again, it could be only me. I've done a song. That is called I Love My Nails. That is about me insisting to love me despite the emotional roller coaster that I've been through. And I wrote Playground Politica, which is another song of mine that I wrote about my childhood in Nigeria. And it feels like my happy kid stayed there. When I moved to Israel, it was like a trauma for me, leaving all my friends and everything I knew. So it's kind of an amazing, again, in my opinion, it's like an ode, a gesture to the teachers and the people that brought me up.
Do you find that writing about these things that have happened in your life helps you in the long run?
Obviously, all of my music is like therapeutic. I go into a session, a musical session, like I never want to go. It's like gym. You never want
to
go.
You have to be dragged there.
Of course. But when you do it, I am so happy. It is cleansing. It's like I have no other choice. I'm sitting in front of a microphone, and then I am improvising, and then I have to face what I'm saying to the mic, because everything is very, very random, and you just say whatever comes up, and whatever comes up, usually what's underneath is the issue, and then you have to deal with it, and sometimes it's uncomfortable, but then you go out, and then it's like something that you've processed, something that you didn't even know that is a problem, and then you think you're the only one that is having that problem, and then you figure out, oh, I'm not alone, when the song comes out.
I think that the gym comparison is good, where you're dragged to go to the gym,
yes.
Then you do your exercise and all the endorphins and positivity comes out of you, and you leave the gym and you're so thankful that you went and did it. And it sounds like it's the same for you.
Exactly.
In the studio.
Exactly the same.
What are you like in the studio with your team around you? Are you someone who is really quick fire in what you have to do, or do you like to take your time?
You can sit next to a volcano and nothing will happen, right? You can sit for hours and you can wait for hours just for something to happen.
Yes.
But then it bursts. Then it just happens for a quick second. And everybody's like, oh my God, what did you do? What did you do? What is that? What was that? What was that? It was like quick, really condensed second. And then nothing can nothing else can happen for days, for weeks. And then it's like it's quick bursts of and then you work around them. It's frustrating a lot of the times. Sometimes I can have like 7 or 8 volcano outbursts a session, and sometimes you don't have them. And sometimes I could spend months without inspiration. Yeah, I need to feel very good about myself for it to happen. And this is the real work.
There's a knock at the door.
We're making a podcast.
You would like to go to the makeup or your hair or something?
No, we're fine.
You're fine?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're fine, I'm fine as well. Okay. Then I give you a signal when we go downstairs.
Okay,
thank
you.
I've got to ask you, so... Israel were the first country to say who they're sending next year with Noah Carell in 2023. How do you feel about her representing your country?
First of all, Noah is a good friend. And I really love what she's doing. I think she is a powerhouse of and she's doing this for so many years. She's like such an experienced girl. We don't know yet what she's going to do, but I'm sure that it's going to be really, really, really big, and she's going to work really hard for this. So I don't think Noah needs my advice. We're so different in who we are and how we create and how we make music. I just wish for her to not listen to the noise.
Do her own thing.
Yeah, there's so much noise in the preparation of Eurovision. There's a lot of toxic stuff that a contestant shouldn't be looking at. And the basic thing that we should remember that it's all about music and art and reflecting the light back to people. This is what we're supposed to do.
That pom-pom dress was incredible. Look it up, like she said, on her Instagram. And those songs that she mentioned, Playground Politics and I Love My Nails, are available on all streaming services. Now, one more interview from Het Grote Song Festival Fiest, and it is the act that I would say most people wanted a picture with. It's the act that Duncan Lawrence wanted to see, as he mentioned earlier. It is Finland's Lordi. Quite simply, the group are Eurovision legends. Hard Rock Hallelujah, I would say, is still one of the most memorable winners of all time, wouldn't you? And I found myself up close and personal with Mr. Lordi himself. The problem with doing a podcast is that we can't see, the people listening to this can't see who I'm currently in front of. Easily the best dressed, the most stylish person here, it is Mr. Lordi. Hello.
Hello. And one other thing that doesn't, you know, come through the podcast is the smell.
Yeah, there's a distinct smell of rubber.
Rubber and sweat and dirt. Yeah, because I mean, I know I look good.
But, you look amazing.
But these costumes are not washable, so... You know,
have they ever been washed since 2006?
Yeah, well, this is not the same costume, obviously. I mean, this is, I don't know, number 8 already after that.
Okay.
You know, so we have a new design every few years. You know, when the new album comes out, we, you know, we are new from head to toe. Even, you know, of course, the character stays the same, but,
yes.
You know, yeah.
Do you have to audition your new designers each time to see who's going to make you look even better than the last time?
Not really, because I'm the designer. I have done every single thing, you know, on my own, always.
Always? That's incredible.
Yeah, I do everything. Everything you see and hear in Lordi is done by these little hands here.
That's amazing.
Here.
Yes. And I just wish people could have the smell, because it is incredible.
It is. It's not a good smell.
Now that I'm right up close to you, the eyes as well are amazing. Intense orange contact lenses.
Yeah. What contact lenses? What do you mean?
Oh, yes, of course, yes. No,
yeah,
no. Yeah. They are your real ones.
Mm-hmm.
there are so many winners, Eurovision winners here today. What's it like when you are around everybody else who's won the same contest as you?
Well, it's quite funny because, I mean, every once in a while there are these get-togethers like you know, like this one tonight. So it's kind of fun to see the familiar faces already. You know, it's like you get to not really get to know these people, but you know them like, hello, hi, nice to meet you again. You know, so it's like this small club that is very, very selective.
Yeah, you are part of an exclusive club.
Yeah, yeah.
And is it nice being part of that club?
Of course, absolutely.
If I didn't see you in this costume, I don't know if I'd recognize you. And that must be so nice to have anonymity sometimes.
Yeah, of course. I can go do grocery shopping or whatever, you know, and nobody knows. Whereas I think all these other members of this club, you know, they cannot do that. They will be recognized. So in that way, it's really good. Yeah.
With Finland, you set the bar in terms of your Finland loves metal. You are show people. In recent years, the Rasmus, Blind Channel. Mm-hmm. You've set a good legacy. Do you ever feel that?
I think I agree with that. You know, I mean, then again, we have to remember that before us, there was already Nightwish that tried for the Finnish, you know, competition, but they didn't. I mean, actually, the people voted them, you know, the Finnish televoters, they voted the Nightwish to continue, but it was the judge in Finland, the judges in the jury who decided, you know, to send someone else. So I think it, you know, it was our luck that Nightwish didn't go, because then I'm sure that Nightwish would have been the number one.
Do you think?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. The question you probably get asked all the time, but currently inside this costume, how warm are you at the moment? Are you a good temperature?
At the moment, I'm normal, you know. Because I'm not sweating yet, that's the thing. So I'm pretty okay, pretty normal.
You know? What's the biggest misconception about Lordi and your band?
Oh, there's many. Well, one for sure is that we were, you know, put together for Eurovision, you know, which is not true, because I did. The Lordi was formed already in 1992. Another might be that, you know, some people think that, you know, we are all about the image and not about the music, but it's completely the other way around. So I think those two are the, you know, the most annoying question that we still sometimes get is like, look, which one is more important, the image or the music? And then I go, like, oh.
Because the thing about your band is everything fits together. Well, it works because everything comes together.
That's
the whole point.
And what's the crime? Where's the crime of being pretty? You know, that's the thing. You know, it's like I mean, because I call ourselves, we're the prettiest band on the planet.
I'd agree with that.
So, you know.
Your skin is immaculate, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, the beard is impressive, mm-hmm, it just all fits together so well.
Thank you.
Have a good night tonight. It's you're a part of so many winners. It's so good to see you all in one place and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
The smell was quite overpowering. Not really a nasty smell, just a very intense smell. More than that though, looking into Mr. Lordi's eyes, those piercing orange eyes, I will never forget that. He is simply a legend. Right, I'm going to take you away from the party in Amsterdam, but we are sticking with a winner, because I'm going to bring in someone who this year has been celebrating 25 years since she won the Eurovision Song Contest. It was held in Dublin in 1997, and Katrina and the Waves performed the anthemic Love Shine a Light. They were victorious, and because Liverpool is hosting the contest on behalf of Ukraine next year, I thought it would be the perfect chance to chat with the United Kingdom's last winner. So a big hello to Katrina from Katrina and the Waves. Hello, how are you?
Well, hello. I'm very, very well. It's so nice to be speaking with you today, Steve, and thank you so much for having me.
I know, it's so great to get you on, especially because this is now the run-up to Liverpool. People have probably been saying this to you since the beginning of the year, but 25 years since you won with Love Shine a Light. Can you believe it? Where's the time gone?
I don't really believe it. It seems more like 5 years. But, you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving, Eurovision, especially if you're lucky enough to win it. Because every year, it's an annual event. It's going to come around and people are going to talk about it. And of course, I'm very happy to talk about the moment that we won in 1997 with Love Shine a Light, because it was, it was one of the most joyful moments of my life, obviously. I mean, when you can do something that impacts on the country where you live and the people who you love, and, you know, all the way down to your record label and your family, it's historic. And it was just such a wonderful thing to be a part of. I'm very, very proud of that, and probably more proud as the years go on. I don't even think that I really understood what it meant to win the Eurovision Song Contest when I did it, because I'd never seen it. And so I've had 25 years to really get well and truly educated on the thing. And as you know, it's taken off in a major way.
Watching you was actually, I know this is a personal memory, but it's one of my earliest Eurovision Song Contest that I remember so vividly. And I know this is weird, but I remember your green shirt. I realized at the time, like, what a big spectacle the show was, even in 1997. Can you remember that moment that you won still in your brain really clearly?
Yeah, of course. I mean, who could forget the green shirt? I mean, you couldn't miss those lapels. That shirt was out of the ark. You know that I bought that shirt from the Cambridge market for about £3 or £5. I can't remember now. I think every time I tell the story, the shirt gets cheaper and cheaper. I got it for 50p. The story with the shirt was no other clothes were working. And it was finally somebody in Warner Records, who we were signed with, who said, well, what about that green shirt you've been wearing all week? Come on, it's Ireland, and it looks good on you. So we went with that. And so, yeah, the green shirt, it was very memorable. It was a very bright, specific sort of green. You know, of course, when we were backstage, everybody was still saying, well, there's no way you can win. Don't get too excited. Even though the votes were pouring in, come on, you buzzkills, pour the champagne already. We've clearly won. Let's get out there. And yeah, I think even Ronan Keating was in shock when we made the little victory lap, if you will, from backstage to the stage, and then proceeded to reprise the song with all the wrong lyrics, out of time, out of tune. It didn't seem like anybody cared, really. I mean, I certainly didn't, but I got the lyrics wrong and everything.
I think you're allowed. I think, you know, even now, yeah, I think you're allowed to get the lyrics wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
especially
you've just won one of the biggest things ever.
I know, after 3 bottles of champagne, I think, yes, it's okay.
When you went into the contest, did you have a sense that you might win, or at least do very well?
I thought the song was good. I thought the song was good, and I thought it was strong, and people seemed to respond to it positively. We spent an awful long time in the studio working on that song to try and get it to sound modern and buzzy and with a beat, because it has an anthemic quality to it, but you don't want to put people to sleep. It had to have a cool beat behind it, and it had to sound, you know, just cool and modern where you could still move to it. Normally when we went into the studio, I would sing things maximum twice, comp the vocal, done. With this one, the amount of time we spent on that very first love, I must have done 350 love just to try and get exactly the right one. We probably went back and got the very first one. But, you know, to me, love, they all sound the same. Love. And they just, again, one more. You know, just relentless, singing it over and over and over again. But we wanted it to have that ABBA quality. So we thought, if it's got the ABBA quality, then we're in there, we're good. So what I was confident about, Steve, was that I thought the song was good. But the pressure, of course, was that it was a 24-piece orchestra, a click track, playing live and singing live, and no pressure. It's the Eurovision Song Contest. So I pretty much, you can see I hardly look into the camera. I played to the room. And back in the day, by today's standards, it was a very intimate setting, a very intimate venue. I don't think there could have been more than a couple thousand people in there. It was at the Point in Dublin. They've razed it to the ground. I mean, you know, it's no longer there. It was a little bit sad when I drove past there a couple of years ago and they said, oh, well, that's where the Point used to be and now it's going to be a KFC or something. Without getting, you know, too sentimental here, it's just really nice to be associated with a song that's just blatantly about universal love.
I totally agree. And I think that's one of the reasons why it was used in 2020 when the Eurovision Song Contest was cancelled and there was that amazing montage and Love Shine a Light was picked. You feature at the end with your dog in the video. You know, there's so many Eurovision songs that could have been picked and it was your one that kind of gave that message. How did it feel when you watched that video with all the participants singing your song?
I didn't know until the night what they were going to do with that. They had said to me, we're going to use Love Shine a Light. I didn't know how. You have to sing the very last line. So, you know, as usual, clueless. So I sang the line and I thought, wow, if I'd known how it was going to work in the grand scheme of things, I might have done it differently. But on the night when they showed all those artists, I couldn't take my eyes off the TV. I was like, what the... And then, of course, when the Rotterdam Philharmonic or some orchestra played it. And it was, I mean, not a dry eye in the house. It was such an emotional moment. And, you know, you're absolutely right. It was the perfect opportunity for the song to really shine, no pun, in a completely beautiful way.
Next year... the UK is hosting the Eurovision Song Contest again. And in 1998, you were sat on the front row in Birmingham and you were kind of presented like royalty, weren't you? It's like, Katrina is here, the winner. What was it like for you to be in a Eurovision or to attend a Eurovision in your home country, essentially?
Well, I had on an Isabella Christensen dress, which was very, very unlikely for me. I was feeling a bit like royalty, tainted royalty. And immediately after that show, I had to get in a car and quickly go and do a performance back here in London at GAY in the gown. I don't think Isabella Christensen has ever forgiven me for the state of that that gown when she got it back. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, Terry Wogan was there and it was an absolute moment. And I think who really brought the diva quality out the whole event was obviously Donna International. I mean, that was a turning point. That was the point where I thought this song contest will be changed forever. Little did I know that Conchita Wurst would then come out and blow everybody away with everything she did. But you you can see how it's progressed. I think that is the natural trajectory of the Eurovision Song Contest. I think it was always very, very much supported by the LGBTQ+ communities, and more so now. People don't have to hide anymore. You know, we don't have to do all that. I mean, I was gay when I did the Eurovision Song Contest, but it was perceived to be better for me if it wasn't made a big deal of. And it was sort of agreed that there wouldn't be any mention of who my partner was or what gender my partner was, because I think everybody thought, well, now we don't want this to become an issue. But, and it wasn't that big an issue for me, because obviously I hadn't been out and proud about it my entire career, because it was always the feeling within the band that, well, none of the other guys are talking about their relationships. I don't know why you should be talking about your relationship and then make it an issue. You have to understand, in the early 80s and in the 80s, it was a very tricky climate for anyone who was of any alternative persuasion. And I just didn't feel comfortable talking about it or being out. It's just, there was no place for it. So when I see now that it's, especially the Eurovision Song Contest, is so out and proud and lively and beautiful. It warms my heart because it's become a very specific venue for LGBTQ+. And I'm very happy about that, proud. And I'd have to say, after the Donna International win, things did change. But I was on the cusp. And before me, the Eurovision Song Contest, it had more of a squeaky, clean, wholesome, prime-time, family-viewing feel about it. Do you know what I mean? It was all very, very, quite formal and antiseptic. I think that over the years, it's got much more raunchy, much more fun, much more free, and there's a lot more artistic expression, which I think makes it a lot of fun. I don't like Eurovisions that are just a bunch of dreary ballads. I like to see somebody do something completely crazy and different.
I know you tried to compete for Sweden 1 year, but do you think, looking at the contest now and how big it is and in the arenas and everything that goes with it, the semi-finals, the whole 2 weeks beforehand, would you like to be involved in it again? Would you like to compete again, do you think? Or do you think, no, that my moment was 97 and that was my special bubble?
Keep it in the special bubble. And it's an opportunity for other people. Sam did incredibly well last year. You can see the progression using social media, using a gathering of great songwriters, using the staging and the styling to get it exactly right. What, drag out old me? It's enough fun to be old me. I don't want to do it again or have any part of it. And after I did the Melody Festival in Sweden, I realized that it was definitely time to move on. And even trying to be involved in Eurovision for another country, it didn't really resonate with me. I couldn't do it with all my heart, like I did for the United Kingdom, which has been my home since 1976.
Sam Ryder got the best result this year for the UK since Imani in 1998. How did you feel watching the UK this year, seeing Ukraine win, and then finding out that it's going to be in Liverpool next year?
Well, first of all, I had a bit of a nail-biting evening because, you know, I've got a bit complacent after 25 years wearing the Eurovision crown for the United Kingdom. It's a nice position to be in. And, I mean, I have to admit, I had a turtleneck on, and I had it over my face for most of the night when the votes were coming in, because as much as I wanted the UK to do well, I didn't want them to do that bloody well.
Love it. I love the honesty. It's brilliant.
So, I mean, the best possible result was that Sam did incredibly well. It's a moment of jubilation, isn't it? I mean, it's sad for Ukraine, but we have to focus on putting on a fantastic show in Liverpool. And I think Liverpool's the right city.
You're going to be in demand next year, even more so than usual, probably, I would say.
Sure. Well, the phone's been ringing and it's going to be a busy night. I may have as many as 4 shows that night. I'll just do the very best I can.
Do you think, looking back at 97, you know, because it didn't have semi-finals then, and you said that in the arena there was maximum a couple of thousand people. Was it as intense as it is now, where the artists are doing, you know, 9-10 rehearsals over the course of a couple of weeks? Was there as many back in 97?
Oh gosh, no. I mean, we went to Dublin maybe a week earlier, and I mean, it was kind of fun. It was pretty low key though. Every night somebody would host, one of the countries would host a party, and we would go, and they'd usually do an a cappella version of their song. Everybody drink loads of champagne, and then we'd have a couple of rehearsals. We'd do a little bit of press. But you remember in 97, it was a new dawn of telecommunications, social media. And it was very early days. I remember somebody saying to me, we need to do something. It's called a podcast. Or it wasn't even a podcast. It was like just a diary. It was so crude back then. Can you write down some of your feelings, and then it goes on this thing called the internet? I mean, it must be so difficult for you to imagine what the world was like without that. There were very few mobile phones, cell phones. It just felt quite relaxed, to tell you the truth, Steve. I didn't feel like there was any build-up whatsoever. until the dreaded moment comes and your name is called, and then you walk out there, and I always describe it as nerve-wracking, trouser-cacking. And you've got 2 minutes and 58 seconds to make an impact, and it's all been building up to that. I think there's many, many more interviews and interest in me now than there was then.
What is your winner's advice? Simple question.
Well, you know, when I went out, I just tried to perform to just a small gang. Forget about everybody watching at home. Try and be yourself. I think it's important to smile and look at the audience. And if you can get the audience on your side, behind you, it's going to come across better on the TV. It's going to come across better to everybody watching at home on a TV. Sounds like an old antique piece of furniture that sits in the corner now. Probably most people aren't even going to watch it on the TV. You know, that's what I did. All I can say is what I did was just try and stay as relaxed as possible and sing to the room, fall back on that, and let the joy happen.
Does the green shirt still exist?
No, because I was duped into thinking that there was this thing called the Eurovision Song Contest Museum in Belgium. And somebody asked me for it and came to my hotel door knocking on the door for it. And I pushed it under the door to him. Then I heard that there's no such thing as the Belgian Eurovision Song Contest Museum. And then it turned up in San Francisco on eBay.
No way! It did! Oh my God!
Yeah, I don't even... I don't know.
You got duped by somebody on the night.
Yeah.
On the night.
Shoved it under my... Stuffed it in one of those laundry bags in the hotel, and I put it under the door because I only had a robe on or something, and I just thought, well, whatever.
Katrina from Katrina and the Waves, thank you so much for chatting to us about your memories of the Eurovision Song Contest. I know that it's part of your DNA and your fabric, but, you know, people love the contest, they love the winners, and Love Shine a Light will always be a moment for the contest. So thank you so much for joining us, and roll on Liverpool, right?
Oh, I just can't wait. So I will see you up there. Bring your little poodles. We'll let the poodles unite in the love of the Eurovision Song Contest. Love you, Steve. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Katrina.
Bye
thank
now.
You.
Bye.
You might be wondering why she mentioned poodles at the end. It's because I've got a toy poodle, and so does she. And so we were comparing them, got them on camera with each other, because that is what you do when you have a poodle. You have poodle chat. But thank you to Katrina. I'm sure that we're going to be hearing Love Shine a Light so much more over the next year. And talking of 1997 and what Katrina was just saying there, I think we should give a quick mention to Paul Oskar, who performed for Iceland that year. He became the first openly gay participant at the Eurovision Song Contest. So maybe we'll try and get him on the podcast at some point. That would be good, wouldn't it? Now, before we go, a new feature for you. We're going to round out every episode of the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast with something called Eurovision on the Spot. And for the first one, I spoke to a certain Swedish winner.
Name?
Måns.
Country you competed for?
Sweden.
Year?
In 2015.
Favourite lyric from one of your songs?
I don't want you growing up to be me.
Who is your Eurovision hero?
Johnny Logan. He won it twice. He's a legend and he is a very nice man.
Where is your Eurovision outfit?
I think it's in the ABBA Museum, actually.
What is your earliest Eurovision memory?
Jan Johansson singing for Sweden back in maybe 91, 2.
What's the thing you most remember about being on stage at Eurovision?
Just sitting there in the Wiener Stadthalle and having won it and just waiting to sing it again, looking out and feeling that, oh, my friends are going to be proud now.
Who was the first winner of the Eurovision Song Contest you met?
I reckon that was Carola in 2007. It was one of my first TV performances, and we were supposed to sing a duet together, and she completely crushed me.
What is the best thing about being in the Eurovision community?
So much love, so much positivity, and there's room for everyone.
Måns, thank you for playing Eurovision on the Spot.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Thank you to Mons and to Katrina and to Netta and to Duncan Lawrence and to Mr. Lordy for taking part in this winner's special of the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast. Thank you for listening. As always, if you've got anything that you'd like to let us know, maybe a guest that you want on the podcast, maybe there's a country that you'd like me to look into more deeply, then just let us know in the usual ways. We will be back before the end of the year because there is the Junior Eurovision Song Contest to look forward to. But until then, I hope you're good and we'll see you soon.
If you want the latest episode of the Eurovision Song Contest podcast as soon as it drops, then subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.